Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. Welcome to Cult Talks Conspiracy.
Before we unseal this file, we wanted to fill you in on some really exciting news.
For as little as $3 a month, you can be a part of our pursuit to hashtag question everything by clicking the support the show link found in the show notes of each episode.
Your support would mean the absolute world to us and help us dive deeper into the mind-blowing conspiracies you, Ty, and I all love.
Thank you for joining us, seeking the truth, and as always, question everything.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
File access granted.
So here we go, Bailey. It's March, and we're going to tackle this obscure conspiracy iceberg we found. And we're going to jump right into it.
Let's do it.
Interestingly enough, Michael Jordan appeared twice on this iceberg, which I was surprised of. I never thought we'd need or have any reason to talk about Michael Jordan over the course of Cult Talk Conspiracy. But here he is, the very first entry on the obscure conspiracy iceberg. Michael Jordan, triple-double debt payoff.
Ooh.
Yeah, do you know what a triple-double is?
No, I don't.
I'll tell you here. So during the 1989 NBA season, Michael Jordan was openly asking the scorers table what he needed to do to reach a triple-double. Triple-double consists of 10 points, rebounds, and assists in one game. So it's a lot. You have to get 10 of those.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up going on a 9-game streak of having triple-doubles, something very uncommon in those times. The theory is that Michael, he was connected with gambling later in his career. He's a prolific gambler. So the theory is that the reason he was so kind of obsessed with getting these triple doubles and going on this streak is he was trying to pay off an obscene debt that he had with someone. Because it's very odd that he would attempt to go on this anyways. And then he was so obsessed of doing it. People think he had this like debt hanging over his head. And he was like, I got to do this. So that was the very first entry on the obscure theory, conspiracy iceberg.
Oh, wow. Short, sweet, and to the point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time. We're going to talk about him actually again later on in the episode, which again, he appears twice on the iceberg.
Right. Yeah, he's interesting. So next we're going to talk about James Garfield was purposely killed by his doctors. So President James Garfield was a Civil War hero. He was actually drafted to become president by the Republican presidential nomination. And this caused some hubbub because Charles Guiteau, who was also an office seeker, lost that Republican nomination to James. Guiteau has a very interesting history because his family actually tried to get him committed on the judgment of insanity in 1875. Yeah, so just 6 years prior, years prior to July 2nd, 1881, when President Garfield was scheduled to speak and then depart the Baltimore Potomac Railroad Station. As Garfield entered the station, Guiteau came out of the darkness and fired two shots into President Garfield, one going through his shoulder, the other one going through his back, missing the vertebrae, but not his spinal cord. At this time, it was not very cool to think about germs and sanitation. So the very first attempts to extract the bullets from President Garfield happened on the train station floor with no gloves. They actually used their unwashed, dirty fingers. So after trying to remove the bullet from the station, he was then moved to the White House where they would again try to remove the bullets. And for 79 days, President Garfield fought infection throughout his entire body, even suffering a dramatic weight loss of 210 pounds all the way down to 130 at the time of his death. The main cause for this death, and I'm going to say it like that, is Dr. D, D as in doctor as well. His name was actually Dr. Willard Bliss. And he was known for being very arrogant and big-headed, and no second opinions were ever made on President Garfield's condition. There's actually involvement with Alexander Graham Bell, who attempted to use a metal detector in order to find the missing bullet inside President Garfield. However, Dr. Bliss failed to tell Bell that the president was lying on a metal bed. As one can imagine, that bullet was never found, and this would result in the president's death on September 19th in 1881. And people were pissed. This was actually known to be the first thing that brought the country together after the Civil War. And even at Gaucho's hanging, he said, "I may have shot the president, but his doctors killed him."
Wow, interesting.
Oh, yes. So next on that list, we have Disney's fake ticket sales. Now, there was a lot in very recent years about fake tickets to Disney World going out that were going out all around the world. Incredibly cheap, you know, too good to be true, involves the resort, the park, the passes, all of that good stuff. Now, I have been to Disney World way back when before all of this, you know, before all of this shenanigans started. And, you know, the parks were pretty full. It was, you know, it was booming back in like the early 2000s. But then after COVID in 2020, there were a lot of people who were going to Disney World, and there was something very much lacking in a lot of the background of these videos and pictures. That was the people and the attendees of the park. Now, despite Disney reports stating that they have hit an all-time high in the early 2020s, all the way up to this current past year here in 2023, of course, the 2020 reports are not back yet. They do estimate a record high. However, it's very easy to question that when the proof simply isn't in the pudding. Where are the people? You know, are they staying in their resorts? What is happening? So to me, I think that they fake ticket sales in order to, you know, further expand on their market and make it seem like, oh yeah, Disney World, you know, the obsolete, all that good stuff. So that's what I got on the Disney ticket sales. I'm also not a big current fan of Disney too, guys. No, I'm not even going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to lean towards the negative on that one.
Oh, yeah.
So moving right along, we're going to move into the extinct animal trading rings.
Now, I was really interested about this
one. This one, I'm interested, but I'm also disappointed because I could not find a lot on this one. As far as extinct animals. Now, illegal exotic animals, oh yeah, there's stuff all over. However, it's mostly illegal in the United States, but occurs all over the world in one of the most largest underground markets, with its headquarters being supposedly located in Africa. A lot of people speculate that the trading does occur for ego, status, and there is a lot of money involved in this market. It's basically, you know, like these animals are products of a criminal empire. Like, let's be real. That's what they're treated as. A lot of these animals are sometimes raised as domestic pets and are even bred in domestic situations in some cases. Some theories do suggest that this underground market is an unknown society of elite individuals with enormous bank accounts and illegal interest. Some even speculate that the existence of extinct animals, or so-called extinct animals, is still running rampant today, but are being held and owned by these elite people and are actually not really extinct, but have a very small number, but are in private ownership.
Wow. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I was very interested to see what that was. People were trading dinosaurs.
I couldn't find anyone trading a dinosaur, but if you got one, let me know.
Next up, we have another presidential killing. Actually, it appears, I think, a couple times like we have on this now. So far, we've got James Garfield.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're moving on to Oswald not aiming for JFK. Now, this theorizes that Oswald was actually aiming for the Texas governor, John Connally.
Oh.
When you dig more into this, you find that Oswald actually had more evidence linking him to trying to assassinate Connally than JFK. Connally actually was hit during the assassination attempt, but he survived. He didn't get as a severe hit as JFK. But what evidence? Well, One day, a letter arrived in Washington, D.C. to the Secretary of the Navy. The letter was from a former Navy man who had been dishonorably discharged and was pleading to have the discharge be changed to honorable. The Secretary of the Navy promptly returned the letter with a denial of his appeal. This Navy man was Lee Harvey Oswald. And the then acting Secretary of the Navy was John Connally. So it's crazy to think that one of the nation's greatest tragedies possibly could have just been the result of an accident. A bad aim on Oswald's part.
Yeah.
At least that's the theory. There is I believe Oswald has vehemently denied assassinating JFK.
Huh.
And I think a lot of that is, it does seem like there's more evidence to say that he would have at least tried to kill Connally.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, he did get hit, but not as a severe hit as JFK. But it is just interesting that there's this link between Oswald and Connally of, Oswald having his appeal denied by Connally.
That's weird. That'd be a hell of a miss. fuck.
Like I said, it's crazy to think that one of history's greatest tragedies could just be the result of an accident.
You want to hear a fun fact about
go for it.
Assassinations? So Robert Lincoln, the son of Abraham Lincoln, was actually present for 3 of the 4 presidential assassinations, only excluding that of JFK. He was there for his father's Abraham Lincoln. He was also present at James Garfield. And then he also was present for President McKinley's assassination as well.
Kind of sus.
Right?
Next up, we have government giant bone suppression. This, of course, the idea that the fabled giants seen in literature across the globe and appearing in countless mythologies actually existed. But the government... or some higher power is covering up the evidence. We actually have a full episode on this, so I'm not getting too much into it. Bailey did back in December. It's file 033. History's biggest cover-up, did giants roam the earth? So if you want to hear more about this portion of the obscure conspiracy iceberg, go back through the archives and find that episode.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Yep.
Next, we're going to talk about Edison's cover-up the original video camera. So Edison, very many inventor of many, many things, including that of the light bulb. He actually designed a camera that was a phonograph. We're done with that word.
Phonograph.
Thank you. A design, and it was an illusion of motion in 1889. However, he had dreams of making the true motion of that of a body or something coming to life, like as we see it in real life. So he then started working with different materials and came up with what we will call the horizontal camera. And it did just that. It ran horizontally, and it also used... tiny sequences of images seen through a microscope. However, it was abandoned after that. And that was actually what brought him to the horizontal camera. And that was a colitis film that was used with perforations on the edges. And this was a success. However, he would only make one of these cameras, where he would make many, many short films with this. Now, Thomas Edison, on top of being an inventor, was also a businessman. And at this time, Paris was actually the number one spot for the film industry in the world. So Edison would begin to buy film patents as well as producing equipment. And if anyone challenged his patents, he would just then sue the competitor. So basically, by owning these patents, he owns the movies. He owns the rights to that film equipment. And in even some cases, theaters would actually have to rent the actual physical screens from Edison and his company in order to be able to show those movies. So he's got his hand in many, many bags. He's a very big businessman. So when Edison decided to stop suing his competitors and started embracing them, another film company by the name of Biographs invented another camera that would rise and Biographs would rise to the number one film industry in the U.S. Edison would then create the Film Trust, where numerous patents, collections, and monies would be shared and distributed. Of course, without biographs, because, you know, Edison wants the whole pie. So basically, anyone who wanted to create a film had to get permission from Edison because he owned all of the patents. Now, those who did not follow this procedure and go through him were rumored to be met by the mob and actually have their sets and equipments destroyed. Jesus. And this would result in filmmakers fleeing to the other side of the country to begin making films, which is how New York City became involved. So he covered up the original camera to get that buck for himself, pretty much, and then met it with force. So let's move on to, you know, everyone getting a little bit more of a piece of a pie. Let's talk about Taylor Swift and Kanye West.
We're going to pop the algorithm.
We're going to pop it, yes.
Talking Taylor Swift and Kanye. There we go.
Oh, my gosh. Just mentioning Taylor Swift alone, I bet everything just went up tenfold. So I actually remember when this happened. It was the Taylor Swift 2009 VMA Kanye West interruption. Now, if you don't remember, or you weren't there, because some of y'all be some youngins, during Taylor Swift's 2009 VMA acceptance speech for Best Video by a Female Artist awarded to her for her song, You Belong With Me, Kanye West unexpectedly ascended the stage, grabbed the microphone, and said, "Yo, Taylor, I'm really happy for you, and I'm gonna let you finish, but Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time. One of the best videos of all time." He was met with booing and a shocked Beyonce and a teary Taylor. In an interview after the incident, Taylor stated she was excited when she saw Kanye West coming up to the stage because it was Kanye West, but then wasn't. She said she didn't know what was happening at the time. When asked if she had any hard feelings or was still a fan of Kanye, she said that she didn't know the man and she didn't want to start anything. This had massive media attention. Even the current president, at the time, President Barack Obama, calling Kanye West a jackass, and Dr. Phil calling the rapper out for taking after a 17-year-old girl. Everyone was Team Taylor, man.
Yeah.
So Taylor actually said in a later interview for Miss Americana, which was a documentary she released, I believe, in 2021, it was shortly after Taylor's version emerged with the whole thing with her copyrights and everything like that. But that's a whole separate story. She said in the interview for Miss Americana that she didn't know if the crowd at the time was booing at her, and it was a very formative experience for her personally and professionally. Now, some speculate that both parties were not only aware this was going to happen, but it was planned in order to gain publicity and either intended or unintended song inspiration. So Taylor may have actually paid Kanye for what would start a nearly decade-long feud.
Oh, yeah. And it got her a lot of publicity.
A ton of publicity.
Can't deny that. She definitely benefited in a lot of ways from it.
Oh, yes. And this was even furthered in 2016 when a phone conversation between Taylor and Kanye had leaked, where in one of Kanye's upcoming songs, he said, "Taylor Swift may owe me sex," talking about the VMA incident. Kanye, even later in that same conversation, calling her a friend, also profiting, again, further profiting from VMA interruption.
Yep.
I think she paid him.
Controversy creates cash.
Absolutely.
That was, yeah. Now, you got the next one. Authorship question.
This was interesting.
What does this mean?
This was cool. So this actually goes a little bit back further in time, where we're going to talk about William Shakespeare. And this brought up the question, did William Shakespeare really write all the works attributed to him? So a group called the Anti-Stratfordians, who attribute their works to one or many authors, and use Shakespeare as the shield. Excuse me. There's a lot of sha-sha-sha-sha-sha in that sentence. So
it's that, like, they all wrote stuff and just, like, blanketed it under Shakespeare?
Yeah. Like, basically, Shakespeare was, like, the ghostwriter name. Like, and that was because, that was brought into question because of Shakespeare's humble beginnings. He was not formally educated. He did not run in the formal circles of scholars and poets, which were up to par with what he was writing. And a lot of people questioned his beginnings on if these beginnings could result in him being called the greatest writer of all time.
Interesting.
So few authors were speculated to have hid under the possible surname or pseudonym William Shakespeare, such as Sir Francis Bacon, Edward de Vere, and the 17th Earl of Oxford, and Christopher Marlowe. Very, very famous poets at that time. It's also
interesting that they would like give up the notoriety for like.
Right. Like it brings that into question too of like, so Shakespeare's work made a lot of money. It had a lot of attention. It was number one in the Elizabethan era. So why would you give up that kind of attention and publicity? Also, another question is Shakespeare doesn't have any record of a formal education, marriage, baptism, taxes, or even transactions, or even a death or birth certificate.
Jeez.
So the mystery of Shakespeare still remains. Did he really exist? We don't know. All we really have is a picture that someone supposedly drew of him, but there's no actual documentation behind him.
Very interesting.
Yes.
So that's level one. We're working our way down. Like I said, we're only doing part one today, but it's the first four quarters. But here we go with part two. We're getting deeper down. And what a way to kick off level two, Bailey.
You're talking
about one of the most infamous events in history.
Right. Yes, the 9/11 fifth plane theory. Now, I had actually never heard of this theory before. So it was very interesting to go in and find out about this. So a TMZ special focused on the possible fifth plane that was involved in 9/11. There was a United flight, a 767, that was scheduled to take off from JFK Airport and land in LAX the morning of 9/11. Something weird started happening, not only on the flight, or on the plane, excuse me, because it had not yet taken flight, and also the airport. So much so that flight attendants actually began speaking with the pilots about it. There was an unusually long line for takeoff that day, and before the plane could actually take off and ascend into the sky, the plane was evacuated, and the plane was locked, and everyone was put back into the airport. So the plane was evacuated, and about 20 minutes later, spectators from the airport window saw men in uniform running up to the plane. Later, they discovered that the belly hatch of the plane had been opened, and the FBI was now on their way. Everyone was interviewed, and some were even asked to pick out four people from a first-class lineup. And yes, it was serious. So there was another 767 that was parked right next to the United flight that contained box cutters in the first class cabin. This is interesting for a couple of different reasons. Number one, no one had been on that plane. It actually wasn't even scheduled to take off that day. So there was no reason for any one passenger to have been on that 767. Everyone should have been on the United flight that was scheduled for takeoff. So there is a pilot of the United flight that believes that there were terrorists trying to remove incriminating evidence from the plane, and terrorists may have intended to have help from the ground that thankfully failed. Big one.
Yeah, big one.
Now you're next.
Yeah, so we're talking about the Titanic. We've talked about the Titanic before. Summer at Sea, we did a whole episode on the conspiracy behind the Titanic. So the Titanic was discovered by a joint operation between, it's Titanic found in 1970s. The Titanic was discovered by a joint operation between America and France on September 1st, 1985. Official. Now, however, there is a Texas oilman by the name of Jack Grimm. He claimed that he found it way before. He claimed he found it in the late 70s. And he would tell people this everywhere. He was a millionaire. He traveled a lot. Every time he traveled, he would find some way to work it in a conversation that he found the Titanic. Unfortunately, he was unable to ever bring forth any evidence. He was known to, you know, he was oilman, so you know he had access to various vehicles to do sea exploration, hunt for oil wells, all that stuff. And he claimed that, you know, in doing so, he found the Titanic. Never was able to show a picture, any sort of evidence, but he just loved to tell people he found the Titanic before it was actually found.
Right.
And he would uphold this claim well into his death in 1998 when he passed away. But until his very last day, he was adamant that he deserved the credit, that he found it way before.
Hmm.
Just no evidence.
None.
Now, up next, we got one. This is probably my big boy out of all of them. Like, a lot of these were kind of glossing over, given the details on. This was the one that really piqued my interest, and I was glad I got it, how we did the drawing. This is the Patterson-Gimlin Massacre. Now, we've all seen the iconic 1967 Patterson-Gimlin film showing a female Sasquatch striding across Bluff Creek. It's long been considered the definitive Sasquatch film, the holy grail of the cryptozoology world. But in 2006, rumors began to swirl that this was only a small portion of the actual footage. It was reported that there was an extended cut of the film.
What?
And not gonna lie, it's pretty dark. According to the story, the film starts off, this is the extended cut, it starts off shaky, and you see three Sasquatch step in the frame, and they begin digging through the sand of Bluff Creek, when suddenly they're attacked with a hail of gunfire from the tree line. One of the Bigfoot is instantly shot dead, and another bolts to the woods. The remaining Sasquatch, strangely, just walks off casually in the direction of the tree line. As the Bigfoot moves, the men continue to take shots at it from a distance. The walking Bigfoot is said to be the one that you see in the film. We call her Patty. That's the name given to her. In 2008, Bigfoot researcher M.K. Davis, who specializes in video stabilization, began to endorse the massacre story and claimed that he found evidence of the event. He says that if you look close enough, you can find the image of a bloody Sasquatch corpse in a hole at the beginning of the film in the first couple frames of the video.
Hmm.
Davis also points to a picture which shows Bob Titmus, Dale Moffat, and a white dog named White Lady next to a pile of red material.
Hmm.
He claims that to be harvested fur. Davis has speculated that the Bigfoot seen in the video was shot twice, once in the leg, which that's also a theory of people, even not going to the massacre theory, but people do theorize that the Bigfoot seen in the video has a leg injury because of the way it's walking. So he claims it was actually shot, and then it was hunted down by the men. The story also mentions that there is a second film, and this film shows a group of men dragging one of the lifeless bodies of the Sasquatch, placing it on a tarp, and then cutting it up into various pieces. Now, other pieces of supposed evidence includes at the beginning of the release footage, you can see what looks like a pool of blood in the creek bed of Bluff Creek, and that the men appear to be cleaning off their hands at the beginning, the idea being that their hands are covered in blood. Now, I've met Bob Gimlin before. He's like a cool guy. I didn't have an extended conversation with him, but I've met Bob Gimlin before at one of the Bigfoot conferences I went to in Hocking Hills.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a nice guy. I don't know if he's the kind of guy that would hunt down Sasquatch, but I've never seen the video, but it's supposedly out there.
You should ask him.
I was unable to find it anywhere I looked. I was unable to find it.
Well, if we see him again, we got to ask him about it.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll go well. And just.
Hey,
hot seat. Yeah.
Remember this traumatic experience you had? Let's talk about it real quick.
Now, up next on the iceberg, we have the Uncanny Valley Predator. Now, the Uncanny Valley is a phenomenon that is yet to be fully explained by science. I guess the best way you can put it is, have you ever looked at one of those animatronic robots, like a human face?
Yes.
Or like a better example to me is the characters in Polar Express.
Oh yeah, those are freaky.
Kind of creeped out. Yeah, you're still creeped out. Like you don't know why, because of this unease.
They look too real.
That's the Uncanny Valley.
They look too
real. Yeah, that's the Uncanny Valley. Like they look too real, but not real.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Uncanny Valley. Now, the Uncanny Valley Predator is the idea that these feelings are from our distant past at the dawn of man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's here that our early ancestors ran into contact with some kind of unknown, undocumented predator that looked eerily similar to humans, but wasn't one. Now, there's the known existence of other species in the recent past, just like Neanderthals or Denisovans, and they could be interpreted as a point in support of the theory, but this hypothetical predator looked similar, but not quite human. So we developed this unease of things that fall into that spectrum. It's theorized this predator would actually blend or trick early humans as a way to hunt. So the slight deviations in the uncanny valley spark this reaction of unease from us because we're recalling this predator that used to hunt humans. So that's the uncanny valley predator. It's very interesting.
That feeds into like instinctual fear.
Yes.
Like primal. That's interesting. I want more on that one. So next we have the George Lucas secret films, which I had to pull the Cult of Lore guys in for this one. I was like, tell me what you know about George Lucas. Cause you know, Star Wars and all of the good things. But, right. So there is this theory out there that George Lucas has a collection of secret films, whether this is ghostwriting for other writers or it actually is a collection of secret films that he has created is still in the question. He has worked with many different writers, such as Steven Spielberg, Sam Raimi, who we talked immensely about on Cold Campbell, and Peter Jackson as well. Now, there are questions on if the editing that took place was actually a George Lucas cut, but this is actually proven to not be true when his wife has actually done a lot of the editing for the films and has even won awards for her efforts. Now, to further on that rumor, there's also a rumor that he created his own form of CGI for these secret films. However, no one knows if these films will ever be released or if they're even in existence.
Wow.
Yeah, there's like, that's a whole pasta right there. I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, there's so much, like, between, like, I found a lot of stuff on if George Lucas had created his own form of CGI, but it was just the mere mention of his own CGI, which was something that I learned about with icebergs, is sometimes you don't find all that much.
Right, right. So, as mentioned earlier, we do have Michael Jordan appearing twice on the iceberg. Now, this is LeBron versus Jordan footage cover-up. LeBron James, Michael Jordan. Obviously, you know, when people talk about the greatest basketball players of all time, these two are usually at the top of the conversation. Now, around the year 2000, LeBron James and Michael Jordan actually had a pickup game together. Now, only one photo from this event has ever been recovered. Just a photo of them kind of standing in the court, in the middle of the court. And the rumor is that this game, LeBron James was 16 at the time, and he was far better than Michael Jordan was. So once LeBron entered the NBA and started to rival Jordan's case as the best player ever, Jordan used his billions of dollars to have every scrap of footage and photograph of this event covered up and buried.
Huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's always something people have talked about. Who's better, LeBron or Jordan? I think LeBron James, I'm not a big sports guy, but I, you know, have friends who are big into sports. I think in the past decade or so, LeBron has like cemented himself as the number one basketball player of all time. But, you know, I'm sure that's a debate that can be hotly contested. So,
I mean, I don't know why it has to be of all time. Why not of just our generation, guys? Like, we're going to grow generationally.
Definitely of our generation. He's transcended, you know, he's doing movies and he's, you know, transcended the sport. That's always something I think is always a good argument for anyone as being the greatest of all time is that they can transcend into different mediums. I think that's a good argument for them being greatest because they have more diversity.
Yes, I think so too.
Next up we have on the iceberg, gangsters ghostwrite mob films.
I believe it. Say less.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty straightforward. I'm not going to go too much into it. It's basically the theory that actual mobsters either write or at least have a big part in writing mob-related crime thrillers for Hollywood. Now, this is either to maintain authenticity in these mob films, or it's even theorized this could be to even intentionally mislead the mainstream on how the mafia actually operates. Which would be good for them, you know, to further just throw off anyone who is trying to investigate mob things. You know, they had this, like, falsified idea of how things actually work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Speaking of, and moving right along with how things actually work, the Sacred Swords of the Patriots League, I never heard of this before. I was expecting baseball players and, you know, like King Arthur things. Not that at all, guys. I'm going to spoil it right now for you. This was actually a Black Ops from the CIA carried out psychological warfare and psychological operations in the Vietnam War in the 1960s. Way different. It came straight out of left field. I had to get help. I'm like, I don't understand what I'm reading here. So this operation would actually attempt to convince the people of Vietnam that there was a rebel camp and forces gathering against the leading communist government in Vietnam. So this was basically spreading, the CIA spreading rumors that there was an already existing rebel camp in hopes the citizens of Vietnam would hear this and actually start their own once they found out that there was no existing force. Now, this may or may not have actually affected the communist regime by taking funds and manpower from them. However, that can't be confirmed because, unfortunately, the regime did not move forward. This plan was kind of evacuated and not seen to fall fruition. So we can't really document or we can't really confirm if this really did take any effect because we never were able to take over the communist and get into those documents and find out what actually happened.
Okay.
So the operation ultimately suffered from a lack of direction regarding the ultimate goals of the operation. Thank you, policymakers. And the disbanding of this operation did eventually lead to the early rounds of negotiations and what became the Paris Peace Accords.
Mm.
So it did serve some good purpose in there. It wasn't all for naught.
So next up, we have one that I was very confused of when I seen it on the list. I wasn't sure what the hell it meant. Uh-huh. It's Bella was connected to occultist Nazis. I didn't know what that meant. I was like, I didn't know if it was like a Twilight fan theory or... or something, or I didn't know.
I know what you are, a Nazi.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's actually much different than that. So it's kind of interesting. So in the spring of 1943, a skeleton was found in the trunk of a tree in Worcestershire, England.
Worcestershire?
Yeah. W sauce England. After an investigation, the identity was found to be a woman aged 35 to 40, and according to the coroner, had been placed while still warm into the tree where she had remained hidden for at least 18 months.
Oh, gross!
Yeah, the cause of death was attributed to asphyxiation.
Oh.
Now, after a decade of theories of the actual identity of the woman, in 1943, a woman calling herself Anna came forward claiming to know the identity of Bella. Bella was the name that was given to the woman in the tree. She claimed that Bella had been murdered by a German spy ring involving a British officer, a Dutchman, and a music hall artist. It was highly plausible. The region's many munitions factories had made it a prime target for Nazi intelligence gathering during the lead up to the Birmingham Blitz. Now, in 1968. The writer Donald McCormick revisited the murder in his book, Murdered by Witchcraft.
Oh.
He asserted that Bella had been a Nazi spy and also a Nazi occultist named Clara Bella.
Hmm.
A woman well known to several senior Nazis recruited by the Adwehr and given the code name Clara. Anna claimed Clara had been killed by German spy ring after becoming romantically involved with a British officer. Now, it was also theorized that Clara was the German cabaret and film actress Cara Braal, who became a spy.
Huh.
Now, she supposedly was parachuted into England in 1941, where she would then, you know, establish herself and begin to gather intelligence for the Nazi party. However, she never established radio contact after she landed. So it's presumed she either died on landing or shortly after was found and killed.
Mm.
So that was Bella was connected to the occultist Nazis. kind of like a spy thriller type stuff there. I was very surprised. I wasn't sure what that had in store.
Yeah.
But that ends level two of the Obscure Conspiracy Iceberg, and we're moving on now.
Getting deeper.
To three. We're getting deeper. Deeper as it goes.
Deeper.
We're going into level three now.
Yes, and starting off level three, we're going to be talking about Romans in America. This is actually a theory that surprised me, and thank you to my dude, Metatron, for always backing me up with my history go-tos. Absolutely love him. We'll probably link this video below because it is super interesting. So the question on this one, did the Romans actually discover America before Christopher Columbus and even before suspected Vikings setting sail? Now, the reason we have this question is because indigenous fruits were actually found in the Americas and only to be grown in the Americas, such as pineapple and sunflowers, which we're going to talk about in a minute, have actually been pictured in Roman art. However, they were never written about by scholars. And this would have been very obtuse because the scholars wrote about all of their findings on all of these different excavations, even through Asia and India as well.
Mm.
So one argument was pineapple versus pine cone. On one of the artwork scene, you can see a plate of food where it looks like a pineapple is being pictured. It's unclear if it really is a pineapple or if it's a pine cone being used for aesthetic purposes.
Interesting.
So to go even further into that, Christopher Columbus actually had communication with Queen Isabella when he set sail to what he thought would be India, but turned into the Americas. America may have actually been named after Roman explorer Amerigo Vespucci. Hence, we get America, and further south into the Americas, we get Colombia. So Amerigo was actually rumored to have found the New World, not Christopher Columbus, even though Christopher Columbus did write in all of his communications to Queen Isabella that he was in India and referred to the people as being Indies. Whereas when Amerigo set sail and landed on the shores of America, he realized that this was a new world.
Okay.
So the sunflower. Sunflower particles were also found in a Roman shipwreck off of North American coasts, and this had been suspected to be used for medicines, the sunflower was. Now, while sunflower is an American plant, the finding is questionable because the leader of the diving team did state that his team had laid their gear in a nearby field, which had been full of sunflowers. So this is either a case of site contamination or they really had found sunflowers and were planning on using them medicinally, which you can do.
Okay.
So moving on, a little deeper onto this iceberg here, we're going to move on to the 1896 Bigfoot corpse. And this was the one that I got super frustrated at because this one, so the corpse was actually found in 1894. But we're going to talk about why it's 1896, so just bear with me. So in Western Canada, trappers encountered a Bigfoot and shot him. This was speculated to have happened at the cabin the trappers were staying in. Photos had been taken of the creature that was shot. However, they were disproven and hidden from public view. It's always very interesting to me when things are disproven and then hidden from public view.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you so scared? So some speculate these photos were covered up to keep the existence of Bigfoot a secret. One of the men present at the shooting, they believe his name was Holiday, however, they're not really sure, stole back one of the photos from the Forestry Division. Also, the American and Canadian governments had interest in covering up the existence of Bigfoot, which is why the Forestry Division got involved. So Holiday stole this photo back, and it was of the corpse of the dead Bigfoot. And there was actually writing on the back of the photo documenting what was found when the photo was taken and how many people were there, as well as the exact orientations the body was in. So one of these photos of the dead Bigfoot and those of the Hudson Bay Company actually... So it's rumored the Hudson Bay Company actually has the photos of the dead Bigfoot, as well as the dead Bigfoot itself. Mm. So, very interesting there. because the Hudson Bay Company is one of the oldest companies in Canada. It is a trading company, and it actually originally started trading in furs. Now, this region of Canada has actually capitalized on the stories of the deceased Bigfoot with tons of local tourism and Bigfoot memorabilia all over. The Hudson Bay Company... Exactly. However, the Hudson Bay Company refuses to comment on if they are housing a dead Bigfoot and or photographs.
Interesting. I like stuff like that.
Me too.
Next up, we have Smallville cancellation due to cult. Now, Smallville was a TV show on the CW that depicted the teenage years of Clark Kent, a.k.a. Superman. It aired from 2001 to 2011. Now, the idea of it being canceled in relation to a cult is because one of its stars, Allison Mack, who played Chloe Sullivan, joined a multi-level marketing company that turned out to be a cult called Nexium. She joined this in 2006, so halfway through the run of the of Smallville. Now, Nexium is a wild group that you can find countless documentaries on YouTube covering. Basically, what they would do is they'd prey on young actors, actresses, and they would claim they could help them develop their talents and also like make connections, things like that in the film industry. You know, it was a multi-level thing. So it's like, you know, oh, we can help you with your acting. Oh, you know, if you pay us for this next level, we can actually get you in contact with an agent. And, you know, oh, the producer, so on and so forth. You know, make you think that you're working your way into the film industry. Now, in 2018, Allison Mack was arrested for sex trafficking and forced labor through Nexium.
Oh, no.
That's what Nexium was doing. They're basically like, you know, getting these young, vulnerable people and then sex trafficking them out and forcing them into labor. So she was found guilty on all this, and she was sentenced to 3 years in prison. So she's actually probably out now. But that's why people suspect that Smallville was canceled, because Allison Mack was, you know, making waves in this Nexium cult.
Well, she should have got more than 3 years, in my opinion.
And honestly, yeah, I feel like that's kind of like a small slap on the wrist for what she was, you know, doing to these people. But
I mean, the entire lifetime's worth of trauma due to
exactly. And she gets 3 years. It's crazy. I imagine a lot of that's probably like, you know, I bet she had like some high paid lawyers.
Oh fuck yeah. It's me next. And Winona Ryder Studio Sabotage. This one was super interesting. I'm a huge Winona Ryder fan. I absolutely freaking love her. She's fabulous. However, it's no secret that Winona Ryder has got some nerves on her. So Warner Brothers not wanting the upcoming Godfather 3 to overshadow the release of Goodfellas may have actually attributed to Ryder's exit from her role in Godfather 3. She was actually set to play the daughter of Michael Corleone, but dropped out due to nervous exhaustion. Ultimately, Godfather 3 did not do as well as projected by the studio, but still made a lot more than what Goodfellas did in the box office. Now, wow. Sofia Coppola replaced Ryder in Godfather 3, and while seen as the weaker choice for Ryder, she actually did win Worst Supporting Actress and Worst New Star in the 11th Golden Raspberry Awards.
Oh, no, the Razzies.
The Razzies. They got her.
Yep.
But was this all done on purpose by Warner Brothers? So, in efforts to have two slices of cake and eat them both too, Warner Brothers may have brought performance value down on Godfather 3 so that Goodfellas would be in closer comparison of numbers. However, this failed when Godfather 3 brought in $138.8 million and Goodfellas brought in a whopping $47 million home.
Oof.
So, big differences there.
Yep,
hate that Winona Ryder had to go through that. However, during that time where she was not working on Godfather 3, she started work on Edward Scissorhands. And I don't remember if that's the role where she met Johnny Depp. I don't remember.
Maybe.
I don't remember. I'll have to find out. I love celebrity gossip. So, the next one I don't have very much on. Loggers kill zoologist. I don't have much on it, guys. Don't get too excited. So this was a believed attempt in, again, covering up cryptids and keeping them shrouded from cryptozoology. Of course, cryptozoologists, they really want to document all of these cryptids, want to make sure they are known and have the proper documentation and recognition as a known and alive species. People don't want that. People want the cryptids kept a secret. They want them safe. They don't want people going after them because, of course, once you have people that have seen an interest in, you know, these amazing sorts of wildlife, you get the other terrible end of that head, which is poaching. So there is that. The only thing that I could find on loggers is how they have received publicity due to killings of local indigenous people. But as far as killing zoologists, I couldn't really find much on that specifically.
Yeah, you'll find that here as we get deeper into this. Even my next few are like quick hits.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the nature of the obscure experience of the iceberg, is these things are so obscure that, you know, information is very lacking.
There's
so,
not a lot on them.
Next up, I have the 2016 coup attempt. So the way the Electoral College works is we assign representatives who vote on who should be president. Whoever gets 270 electoral votes wins the election. Now, there was a concentrated effort to get the Electoral College members to change their vote away from Donald Trump to another candidate. The methods used here were lobbying and alleged threats and bribes even.
Hmm.
Now, some political figures were mentioning they had dozens of votes that they were going to change to result in the election, you know, going their way.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, only about half a dozen actually changed their vote. And the coup attempt failed. But that's the 2016 coup attempt. Pretty straightforward.
There's so many coups that have happened between now and 2016. It's like, which one are we talking about? This is our last one on level 3, guys. We're moving right along. So U.S. Navy encounters unknown animals in the Congo. Let me start by saying, yes, number one, this is possible. Number two, there are stories of killer elephants that come from Belgian explorers that have hit the mainstream, as well as, I'm so sorry for this pronunciation, and Dingonyx, which is basically the walrus of the jungle. I'm getting looks over here, guys. Which is basically the walruses of the jungle have been a feared creature by Congo natives, which actually caused migration of tribes and is responsible for many, many murders within those tribes. A lot of the Congo has yet to be explored, and there are even villages and tribes in the Congo that have yet to be encountered by modern day peeps. Now, proof of this has actually been shown on Google Earth and satellite imaging. You can see where these villages and tribes are. Some of them are covered by trees, so it's really unclear if it's an actual settlement of a tribe or a village, or if it just might be a hunting ground.
Okay.
Now, Belgian military actually encountered a giant snake measuring 49.2 feet long and had a triangle-shaped head. There are also sightings of the Mahamba, which can get up to 50 feet long and length and lurks beneath the waters of the surface, lurking for larger fish or even boats. Now, this is a croc. This is a big crocodile. These are similar to Jurassic Age crocodiles that used to roam the earth as well as lurk in those waters. Now, the U.S. Navy may have either seen one of these Mahambas or another possible dinosaur known as the Makalan Bembe, which translates into the one who stops the flow of rivers. It's still rumored to live in the Congo and is perhaps either similar species or a direct descendant of the plesiosaur, which is also rumored to be that of the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, the Makalan Bembe is like a notorious like Congo cryptid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So that is all I got for the U.S. Navy encounters unknown animals of the Congo and wrapping up level number 3.
Ooh, we're heading on to level 4. We're getting deeper.
Deep.
We're wrapping up part 1 here. So this was actually not a lot I could find on this. I was pretty surprised the little bit I did find. So this is Japanese interference in the American Civil War.
You didn't find a lot on that?
Didn't find a lot on
that. I'm shocked.
Yeah. So apparently what happened here was the American Civil War, or during the American Civil War, certain Japanese elements who were angry at the U.S. military because we threatened them years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They conducted some naval conflicts. And the idea was they would weaken the United States in the middle of this Civil War. Now, another tidbit I found that was interesting was that I guess actually like some Japanese immigrants came to America and helped the Confederacy fight the Union.
Huh.
Yeah, that was I'd never heard of that. But apparently Japanese citizens were fighting with the Confederacy and they traveled away from Japan just to do it, just to kind of help weaken the country. And I think it's because they saw this like coming superpower. And they were trying to weaken it, you know, before things actually happened.
I'm going to keep my opinions to myself on that one. It's nothing bad. It's nothing bad. I promise you. It's just some hot topics that I don't want to share. It's just some hot topic trigger things that I don't want to share. So moving right on along, the 1901 Everest expedition, because y'all know I love them cold expeditions.
Oh, yeah.
So this one definitely rang echoes of Dyatlov Pass to me, which we just finished up back in February, if y'all want to go take a look at those.
Yep, just last month.
Just last month. So the 1901 expedition was actually the first alleged Everest expedition that took place secretly before the first documented expedition in 1922. Now, of course, 1901 expedition did fail. This was supported by notes and time period clothing that were found atop of the mountain. It's unclear what happened to the team and even the intentions of them being there. It is speculated that their fate were met at the hands of a Yeti or a Mehmeh.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Hand in hand with Dyatlov Pass.
Oh, yes. And it does ring echoes of Dyatlov Pass, which is still a mystery, and we still don't have any answers. There are no government or sports teams that have taken responsibility for these notes and clothing being found, and no explorer or explorers have been named in planning to head to Everest in 1901. Records do only show the expedition in 1922. However, it is very important to note that in 2023, a video surfaced of a body being found on Mount Everest and sliding down the mountain after a strong wind. There was also a tent that was shown. This further proving that more people have ascended Everest rather than ever descended the mountain.
Terrible.
That video is freaking terrifying, too. Like, I imagine. It kind of reminded me of you being like, yeah, there's just dead bodies popping up on my feet. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel like Ty now. But like, I mean, they really are just like sliding down the mountain. And I mean, it's terrifying. Like there's women screaming in that video. Like it's traumatizing. It is not for the weak at heart. But I mean, it's just so sad to think that like these people's families could not know anything that happened to them. And their body is just up there on the mountain frozen in time.
Now we're moving on to the German TV alien hijack. Now, this is not to be confused with the more popular 1977 English, what was it, Ashtar Galactic Command hijacking, which is a very interesting broadcast hijacking that took place. So the German TV alien hijack actually took place on November 7th, 2004. The German TV channel Proximian Programming was abruptly interrupted by a terrifying and confusing sight. During a car commercial, viewers' screens went to static for about 30 seconds. Suddenly, they witnessed an indescribable greenish creature behind what looked to be a desk. It began speaking in some bizarre alien language, then suddenly stopped. Looks to its left, then back to the screen where it stares in a blank, confused manner. The screen then cuts to static, then programming begins as normal. The next day, the TV channel claimed that it was all a stunt to promote the upcoming game Halo 2. What? They then re-aired the footage, but it was not the footage that people saw. Instead, it was a cheap-looking recreation to look like it was part of the Halo universe. The original footage has never been recovered. So we picked up the transmission of some alien news program, it sounds like.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure aliens were just like, hey, let's fuck with them real quick. They might have. I don't know how vindictive they are.
Like, well, it seemed like just going on, like it was like they weren't expecting it, and they noticed, like, oh shit, we're not.
Oh, fuck. Wrong frequency. Wrong frequency. Wrong
frequency, yeah.
Phil, what the fuck are you doing?
Next one I have here is Eco Ningyo footage. This is a short one. My next couple are pretty short. The Eco Ningyo footage. Now, Eco Ningyo footage is an alleged video of a statue of Mary that was crying tears of blood in Japan.
I remember this.
Yeah. The Catholic Church was unable to debunk the case. They investigated it heavily, were unable to debunk it. However, the video showing this has been lost. But if you know that the Catholic Church is involved, it's probably not lost. It's probably just tucked away somewhere.
It's hidden.
Or we can't find it, yeah. Next up, another hot topic. The 4chan predicted Epstein's death.
Nope, hang on. There goes that algorithm again. Hang on, give it a second.
Now, 4chan, 38 minutes before the first tweet about Epstein's death, which came from ABC News reporter Aaron Katarski at 8:54 a.m. Eastern time, 38 minutes prior to this, 4chan posted, "Don't ask me how, I know, but Epstein died an hour ago from hanging, cardiac arrest. Screen cap this." The post reads, the text was accompanied with an image of Pepe the Frog, but no one has ever came forward as the author of the post. So 38 minutes before anyone knew that Epstein died, there was a post on 4chan breaking the news.
Sketch.
And no one knows who it was.
Sketchy.
Now, next up, I have Yura Yusov. Yura Yusov. Yura Yusov is basically an alleged serial killer who is actively operating in Russia. No one knows who it is. He's apparently got online video blogs of him, like, you know, plotting murders or in the process of murders. And also, he's even taken several personality tests online. Attributed to him that you basically show that he's a psycho. But all these blogs and personality tests have either been lost or are being actively covered up by the Russian government.
Might be a serial killer working for the Russian government.
That's an interesting idea, yeah.
Okay, so this is going to be a little bite as well. Hollywood Studios funded Dominican gang wars. It took me a minute to understand that Hollywood Studios was actually Disney. So once I figured that out, you know, the research didn't become easier, but I at least understood what I was looking for. So the Trinitarios. It's a Spanish word. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing it correctly. Were established in 1993 in New York. They were named for three revolutionaries of the Dominican War of Independence: God, Homeland, and Liberty. In 2009, the U.S. Attorney District of Southern New York dismantled the group through prosecutions. By 2011, 50 members of the group were charged with racketeering, narcotics, and firearm offenses. Now, while Hollywood Studios, Disney, is accused of funding the gang wars in the Dominican, it's far more likely, in my opinion, that they would have funded the Yakuza, which is an Asian gang located in Japan, stretching into China. Disney does a lot of work in China, including the filming of the 2020 film Mulan, where they did film on communist grounds. And that's all I got on that.
Okay. So we'll wrap things up here. Tier 4 is coming to an end, and so is the first half of our obscure conspiracy iceberg. This actually kind of goes hand in hand with what you were talking about earlier with the Romans in America idea.
Yeah.
So this is African colonization of Central America. Now, many of the earliest Africans to arrive in the Americas came to Central America with Spanish colonists in the 16th and 17th centuries. And people of African descent actually constituted a majority of non-indigenous population in the region pretty much thereafter. This theory suggests that they actually arrived much earlier than is commonly accepted. This also kind of goes hand in hand with, as I mentioned, the Romans in America thing, just the idea that different cultures have interacted and shared customs long before what, you know, historians popularly believe they actually did. But that's what I had on that.
Oh, nice. Nice, yeah. Short and sweet. Oh, yeah. Man, that's freaking awesome. I feel like I kind of just ran a marathon, to be honest with you. Like, there was just so much. I texted Ty last night, and I was like, my head's getting ready to explode. And now I feel like we're just kind of on overdrive right now. Like, I feel like mega mind right
now.
Yeah,
it's a lot of stuff. You know, we conquered 33 subjects, and we're only halfway through this.
Halfway.
But yeah, this has been fun. This is our little project for March, just to break things up and try something new. You know, we mentioned way back in January that we were going to try some new stuff this year, and this is one of the ideas we had. You know, it's kind of a rite of passage for most conspiracy theory podcasts or YouTubers, is you got to eventually tackle an iceberg.
Yes.
And we found this obscure one, thought it was perfect. It's just stuff that, you know, a lot of it's not things I've ever heard talked about before, so... It's really interesting to kind of expand what we know and expand on these different ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this has been fun, Bailey. It was an exercise. It was fun. We're not done yet. We still have part two coming out here in a couple weeks. But I think that does it for us here on the obscure conspiracy theory iceberg part one. Numbers 1 through 33.
Whew.
Yeah, make sure you guys follow us at Cult Talk Net across the board. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. X. Keep up with all the news from Cult Talk Net and keep an eye out for Conspiracy Theory Iceberg 2. I'll probably post the iceberg for this first half so everyone can kind of see it as a visual on our Instagram at Cult Talk Net. So make sure you guys keep an eye out there. Of course, Bailey and I are back here every other Tuesday right here with Cult Talk Conspiracy. Cult of Lore comes out the first and third Thursday every month. Cult of Campbell, it's around here. Actually, this month we have it's virtual Bruce Fest is coming. So
yay!
Make sure you guys check out brucefest.co to get tickets for that event with our friends who put that on. So we're happy to be a part of it in some manner.
They're all such wonderful.
Make sure you guys
people.
Check that out.
They're all such wonderful people. Like they've been awesome.
Yeah, they've been awesome to us. So. Make sure you guys check that out, brucefest.co and also brucefest official Instagram. But that does it for us, Bailey.
That's it.
We took a deep dive. We're halfway down the iceberg and we got the big dark second half coming. And if you thought the stuff was obscure on this one, just wait, because there's some really obscure shit on the second half.
Oh my gosh. So, I got nervous. I started sweating when Ty showed me the second half. I'm like, are you sure we can do this? does this abide by CTN policy? We'll be fine. It's fine. No one's going to lose their job.
But there you go. I've been Ty.
I've been Bailey.
And until next time, question everything.